talking about online businesses, buying them, building them right, but really not starting from scratch. This conversation is about either getting one and making it better or finding one to get. Hey, everybody. My name is Bill Gallagher. I'm your scaling coach, host of the weekly Scaling Up Business podcast. We've got a couple episodes like this every week for you. We talk about everything to do with growing your business and the leadership required to do it. This is another one of our Getting Real episodes here. We're talking about online businesses, but we're also talking with our guest here about his experience growing, how he got into the business like that. Because our Getting Real episodes are so much focused on the entrepreneur themselves, we're sponsored by and brought to you by the Entrepreneurs Organization chapters of the Bay Area, EO Network, eonetwork.org. EO, Entrepreneurs Organization, is a global organization for entrepreneurs. It's a member-led, a peer kind of an organization to connect, learn, grow, and have some fun together with entrepreneurs. We have three chapters, like I said, where I'm located in the Bay Area, and I've been around that organization for about 22 years now, and I'm president of one of the chapters today. But really, it's an ongoing thing. The whole world of scaling up actually grew out of why... Today, EO was then called YEO. So that's kind of where it got its start with Vern Harnish and in an old program there. Anyway, we've got this organization here. We've got three chapters in the Bay Area. We'd love to have you check us out and see if it's a fit for you too, or around the world, right? We're talking, our guest today is in Australia. So check out eonetwork.org for more information about that or to apply and so on. So I'm joined now by Jared Krause. I didn't ask how you pronounce your last name.
Yeah. Krause is the nickname, but Krause is correct. Yeah.
Krause. That's a good nickname, really. So he worked, it's funny. So Jared worked in the plumbing business before becoming an entrepreneur. And it's really great because a lot of times you need to get in and fix the plumbing of your business, right? In order to get things right. Water flows a particular way. So does money. Money flows out. Water flows downhill. Paydays on Friday. Things that are important to remember in keeping your business right. I think there's something there.
Oh, for sure. Like, I mean, a lot of people come to me and they're like, oh, I want to buy a business. And I'm like, cool. Well, first let's work out your finances, because I like to use it. I used to call it the anti-bucket analogy, where if you're going to put money into, say, your savings account or your investment account, and that money is, you got so many leaks because of your spending, overspending on entertainment and all that sort of stuff, then you're going to find it hard to build up the capital. And then also, if you're going to finance part of your business, but you don't have that plumbing hooked up correctly, then as soon as you start financing it, you and that plumbing's not working well, is you're going to hemorrhage money, and that's going to be way worse.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So money flows in, money flows out, right? You want to keep it flowing, not hang on to too much of it, but you want a little bit to end up in your account, your bank, your pocket, right? I think these things are really critical to it, and it's useful to do that. So he started in this business. We're going to talk about all of that. So Jared, before we get into it, as people can tell, your accent, you're calling us from Spain today.
See. No. Claro.
Sydney, right?
Just near Sydney, just north of Sydney. Near Sydney. In Australia. Yeah.
Nice. I've never been. It's on my list, though. We'll get there eventually. It's funny, my wife's been a bunch of times. I've never been to Australia.
When we open up and let people in, which I think should be soon.
I've got more vaccines than you probably have.
Well, they're rolling it out. They're rolling it out here.
Yeah,
big time.
All right. So talk to us a little bit about your business. Tell us, what do you do, right? Create a picture of that. What does it look like? What do you do?
What do I do in my business in terms of operations and working?
Not your job, but what does the whole company do?
Yeah. Cool. All right. So what we do is, a lot of people are, it's hard to make money online. You know, we've got these people selling thousands of Amazon courses. You know, you can make money in 22 seconds by starting an Amazon business or starting any business.
Right.
But starting businesses is so damn hard, Bill. Like the, as you know.
No, that's easy. I saw the course. It's just.
Yeah, $1,000 and you can do it. You buy a course and you're good.
Yeah.
So I mean, I've had that many people come to me and say, Jared, I've started multiple businesses and it's just so hard. The startup phase is really, really hard. It's hard to get it moving.
Yeah.
To go from zero to movement is really hard. And I started there as well. So I started trying to start my own online businesses. Like I was the plumber, like we said, and hated that lifestyle and realized like I need to do something different. So I want to make money online and travel. So
yes,
and have a better lifestyle through owning an online business. And I found it really hard. And then I came across that stat from the Small Business Administration study from America that 90% of startups fail. And when I kind of saw that stat, I was like, wow, okay. Well, if 90% of these things are failing and I'm going to fail, say I have to try and start 10 businesses to get one that's just going to pass that failure rate. Why don't I go away and buy one that's already done that? And so that's what I did. And then I bought a few, bought one and then two and then three, replace that income from work. And then people were like, hang on, can you teach me how to do this? Sort of found out that I was buying these small little website businesses and growing them. And they were like, well, I don't want us to do the startup phase because I'm failing and buying these. You know, I bought three courses, I spent $3,000. I spent 3 years, I've gotten nowhere. Can you help me?
Yeah, it's a lot of hard work. So you teach people how to buy them, how to make them work better, all of that, right?
Yeah. So the business, what we do to answer your original question, sorry for going off on a tangent there, is we help people find the right business for them according to their goals and guidelines and their financial situation where they're at today. And then we help them buy the business. So do due diligence to make sure they're not going to get taken advantage of by a broker or a seller and buy a lemon. And then we help them set up systems and processes and grow that business once they've purchased it.
And workshops, mentoring, podcasts, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. So it's a membership. People can join on a membership model. So they can join. If they don't like it, they can leave. However long it takes them to buy a business is up to them. And then how long they want to stay around and grow it is up to them as well. It's up to me to provide awesome value to keep them there. And if people want a bit more hands-on work, one-on-one coaching with me, then they can join the mastermind and we help them grow their businesses, you know, by rolling up our sleeves a bit more.
So let's talk about that's what you do. We know you got your start. You were fiddling with it while working as a plumber and alarmed by some of the mistakes along the way. Let's talk about lucky breaks first. What do you feel like has been your biggest or your main lucky breaks in getting to this place that you're at right now?
I think the second business I bought was, and I was saying this to Lucy, is that one of my lucky streaks is the second business I bought, I bought it and this is out of complete luck, being in the right place at the right time, buying the right business. And I was still green at this time in the stage of buying business because it was my second business purchase. I was able to achieve 100% return on my investment within 7 months. So say I bought the business for X, I got all that money back in 7 months' time. And that was not just because of me, maybe a little, I would say even just the smallest minute portion was a little bit of help from myself, but mainly due to the work from the previous owner of the business how he'd set the business up prior to selling it. So that was a huge lucky break for me to go, okay, I've reaped my income back very quickly. Now I can roll that into another business. That was definitely a lucky break for me.
Yeah, I can see that. Because you could have gone through 9 more businesses before you had a payout that fast. That's pretty fast.
Yeah. Well, today a business will make around 20 to 30% return on your investment per year. So within, 4 to 4.5, maybe 5 years, depending on the business, you'll make your money back from that business. So say you buy a business for $100,000, you know, you might make $20,000 to $30,000 a year. If you times that by 10, it'll be a different story. So that's the basic mass. Yeah, but that was definitely a lucky break. And that for me was back in 2015. So 6 years ago.
6 years ago. And then how did the very next one go? Did you find it was much harder, the one right after that?
Yeah, I did. I found it was a more, it was a similar price margin product on the business, but it was just more work, like more customer service. And it was just fiddly and didn't earn the income that I hoped it would. And I held on to it for too long before I sold it. Yeah, it just wasn't the same experience. So we're gonna get that when we invest in multiple businesses. And that's the main reason I like to like try and teach people is like, let's work out what's the right one for you so you actually enjoy it and it gives you some level of fulfillment and it's not stressful and clunky and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So
if that's your initial inspiration and success and in the beginning, what do you suppose has been your toughest moment or biggest crisis so far?
My biggest crisis in business for me was when I started growing too quickly and I was not so much a one-man band, but that I was the bottleneck in the business, that the business couldn't grow anymore because I personally couldn't take on any more clients.
So were you doing or how did that go? What did that look?
Yeah, great question. So how this looked is I had a when I first started teaching people, I just decided I'm gonna sell them the course, but I don't just believe in giving you info product. I want to make sure you get a result. So the course comes with coaching from me to make sure I can hold you accountable and you get a result. And I started taking on people and they started getting great results and success and all that sort of stuff. And that's when it starts to go, all right, people, it's, you know, the feedback wheel starts to grow and more people were coming in and joining and working with me. And what happened is I got to a point that I just had so many clients that I was working too many hours. You know, just phone call after phone call, phone call after phone call. And what made that super hard was I wanted to bring on more people. I wanted to help more people. Also, yeah, I wanted to make more money as well so I could build this thing up. But I got sick. I got really, really sick. And I kind of worked through this period where I just have the sales team making the sales, the marketing team doing their thing, getting leads, making sales, and I just do coaching full time. And about 18 months after I got really sick doing that, I went to the doctor for something completely different, a holistic health doctor. And they said, oh, were you sick 18 months ago? I said, yeah, but it wasn't too bad. You know, I just came and went. I said, no, that was very bad for you. In fact, you had glandular fever. And what glandular fever turns into is Epstein-Barr virus. And there's four classes of Epstein-Barr virus. The fourth is the worst, where it's through your body, your blood, your organs, and your brain. I was class three. So it was through my body, my blood, and my organs, but not through my brain. So I was very lucky to get to find out that I even had Epstein-Barr virus. It would have got far worse really, really quickly. After I had found out, if I didn't find out. And so I had to go on this period of changing my diet, changing my supplements, resting, sleeping. Like I'm obsessed with surfing and I wasn't able to surf for more than like half an hour a day, which is huge for me because now I like to surf 2 to 3 hours a day. And same with work. I had to cut down my work hours and it was really hard for me to decrease my work hours. I changed my business model at this time, which is luckily I had done so. But to go from like working a 40-hour week work week to like 20 is tough when you love working as well. So that's definitely probably been the biggest challenge for me is not looking after myself. And in hindsight, you know, reading books and listening to podcasts and all that sort of stuff, like we need to protect the asset. And if we're the main driver of the business, we are the asset. And so that was a really tough one for me. And I still struggle with it today. You know, it's that balance of making sure I have enough self-love for myself.
If I get out to surf twice in a week, I'm happy.
Mm. Where do you live?
I live in San Francisco.
Yeah,
and cool. For the most part, I am doing wing surfing now with a wing and a foil, because to get to waves is, it's a little far for like every day.
That's crazy though. Wing surfing. So you got the wing above your head, right? And then you've got the surfboard, but it's got a foil on the surfboard.
A foil board. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Foil board. Yeah, yeah. Those things fly. You must be going clocking up.
They rip along. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're really fast once you get up and going. At first, it's kind of plodding. Then you get up on the foil and you just take off, right?
Yeah, the foils are fun. I've had to go at foiling and it's difficult to get used to. It really is, isn't it?
Yeah. The prone foiling, foiling in waves yet, I've only done once and I didn't get very good. Like I got up, but I wasn't yet good. I think I need a different board.
Speed management's hard.
Smaller board.
Waves, because if you on the foil, if you go too fast, it pushes you out of the water and you wouldn't have that wing to sort of like ease you back down. You'd have the gravity would pull you back down, so you smash into the water. That's what I noticed anyway for me.
When I see other guys doing it and gals, that they're like, you know, they're moving back and forth, they're cutting back in and out. And they're kind of finding that balance of how much lift, and there's definitely something to do there. But I think before I do more of the foil surf, I need to get a smaller board, one that's a little bit easier to paddle in, and maybe not such a big foil, because my foil is like, it's like, boom, you're up.
Yeah, I think the smaller board would help you definitely move, get that flow movement more in the waves for sure. Yeah.
Talk about so you've come through that challenge now. You sort of found the personal balance. You're focused on what you do well and you've got folks around you managing parts of it.
Yeah, definitely. So what I do well is I'm great at chatting to people and building relationships and connecting with people and having these chats with you, creating content. So, you know, with my podcast, I just basically, if we're going to talk about terms of operations, I basically record podcasts, I go on podcasts, record YouTube videos and send emails. You know, I like to reply to people who do actually email me. I like the human connection and I like to show people that I'm real.
But all that is just drawing in leads, right? Nobody's paying you to listen to a podcast. Nobody's paying you to get emails, that kind of thing, right? That's all business building.
Yeah. That's just all, getting known, getting seen. Yeah.
And then do you do any part of the production, the value creation side of the business, or are you just kind of feeding the engine?
I feed the engine. Yeah. And then so
you're like, not doing coaching anymore.
Yeah. So I stopped coaching for like a 2.5, maybe 3 year period.
Yeah.
So I could just let my health work, you know, get my health good and set up my own personal boundaries on work.
Your routines, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then so last year, I was like, I really do miss working with people. You know, and the results that we were getting, you know, when you get results for people and you're working with them one-on-one, it's just like this awesome connection relationship. It's just magic. So I did open up to start working with people last year, but have a cap. Like I'm never going to work with more than 20 people at a time, right? Other than where I was at before, which was silly. And sometimes we have less than 20 people, which is cool. I've set a good boundary around that, and I do coaching calls, but I only do maybe 5 a week, which would be, you know, 5 max a week, which is like 5 hours of work.
Yeah, not that much. But so you've put enough of it around with the membership, with the online resources and the classes and the other people working in the team that that's a going thing now. So let's talk a little bit about some of the lessons that you've learned. Why don't you give us some of your top three, top 10, whatever, around running online business as well? Because even our mixed or hybrid businesses, like everybody has some online presence today. They're doing something with it. Share some of the wisdom around that with our listeners, if you would.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think,
or just tell some stories of people who've done it well or people who've done it shit, you know?
Yeah. I'll tell you some stories of that's good. People have done it not good and good. So the biggest, there's mainly one thing that I like to do that I really focus on. And the key word here is focus. If you only get one thing from this chat that we have, it's focus, right? There's one thing that I focus on when people join the mastermind or in my business, in growing a business, and that is focus. So a lot of people come to me. And so as an example, there's a guy who owned an online business that was selling courses and wanted to start, you know, running a membership like I had, and was doing 7 million different things. In fact, what actually happened is the team, like, he became a partner of this business. And there was two people that built the business, and he became a partner to start operating the business. And like, I want you to grow it. And what the couple had done previously before he joined is they went and bought every single online marketing course and put the team through every single online marketing course. Now, a lot of people listening are going to be like, oh, that's awesome. Maybe I should do that. I'm going to build this world-class team. But what stuffed them up really, really badly is they did everything each and every course told them to do. So they're doing 10 million things. And it was just destroying their business. They were overworking and they were just running around in circles like a headless chook. And so what I said to the guys, like, we don't need 10,000 strategies. We don't need all these different courses, all these different like opt-ins and, you know, lead magnets and all that.
Cluttered, confused.
Yeah. It's just, you're doing too much. And this is what so many people do is like, I want to grow a business. I'm going to try and market on this channel. I'm going to market on this channel. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. They do too many things. It's basically just like the 80-20, right? The Pareto principle that we all know. And so the biggest thing I help them do is like cut out all this stuff that's not working and focus on what is working and only do that. And then create barriers and boundaries and disciplines to not go back into those old habits of, oh, I'm going to try this, I'm going to try that. So basically we canned, like, he's still selling the course, but we canned all the strategy and all that sort of stuff that he was doing. And we're just doing one thing is podcasting, getting leads through podcasts for free organically. And then he's just feeding them into the membership and he's doing far less work and making far more money. Another example is that another person
bought. Before you tell that, hold that next example for a minute. Sure. Underscore for people, you know, whether in the early stages of a business, you're just trying to figure out what, if anything, you have these different ideas about solving different problems and you just try it. What will people pay for? Who do I know? Like, where can I get this? Turn this into a business. So you're fiddling with stuff. But even as the business grows well beyond that startup stage and you've got a growing concern, maybe you've got even 50 people on your team at this point or more, you may notice though that you're still doing a lot of things, not all of which are actually working. And the pressure and discipline, one of our recent clients last year was really, really hard hit by COVID and very nearly went bankrupt and all that. And I just kept telling him, I don't know what it's going to take. It's hard. Just cut everything out that you can, but don't quit. Just like hang on to any thread, try to promote any way you can, see what you could do. On the other side of it, he found that he ditched complexity and expense and he'd found some business and he's more profitable and more cash positive than ever. And now he has people offering serious money for the business, right? So that, and same thing true with me taking over a business years ago. And like the whole thing wasn't working and we were suffering. Parts of it were working though. And only when we found the courage to ditch and shut down, only when I was backed into a corner, did I shut down all the shit that wasn't working. Did we find what was actually scalable and start to like build that? And that got very interesting, right? Like getting rid of the things that you hope will work someday. But if you're honest, really, they're not working. That's really hard.
It's so hard. It's so hard. So we, I mean, there's so many different clients that I can go through you in their stories with growing their businesses from being in the mastermind. But what you said is like cutting so much out is probably one of the most important steps is I find, you know, less isn't just more. Like for your client, less is so much more. It's not just less is more. Less is so much more in the fact that it helps you to cut out what's not working and to be able to work less. And that working less allows you to have more space. Like I just love space. I love time. I love space. And it gives you the mental capacity to rest and have creative ideas pop up. Now, a lot of these creative ideas are going to be things like, oh, I could try this, or I could try that. Or yes, this is a good idea. I'm going to run off and chase this rabbit. And then I'm going to chase this rabbit. But it's also when you do have that space is realize that narrow it down, make sure the creative ideas that you do have, you chuck out about 99% of them and then focus on the 1% that are going to help that one strategy that you're particularly working on. So that's pretty, pretty key. Like, for example, one of the guys who joined, he's got an Amazon business, Amazon FBA business, and he was doing crazy hours in the business. And what I basically did is like, look, we need to get all of these tasks off your plate because you're the bottleneck in the business and it's not growing. You don't have time to think about these different things that you can do. Okay. And what's going to be the one big growth strategy that you just put all your effort and time and thinking into. So we listed out all of his tasks, right? And I said, all right, like list them all out on the next call. We went through all of them. I said, who are we going to get to do these? What he didn't realize is like, he didn't realize he was the operator of the business. He wasn't the owner. He was the operator. And so I said to him, we need to get you a GM. We need to get you a general manager. We need to get you a COO, an operator, whatever you want to call it. And worked out, or like, he's like, well, how the hell am I going to find that? I said, it's easy. You've already got one on your team.
Yeah.
It's your main marketing guy that knows everything about your business. The dude that's been with you for day one, promote him, give him more money. He's going to, when you give him more money, he's going to help the business grow more because you're going to give him some equity in the business. You're going to free up time and space and you're going to be able to do, you know, live a better lifestyle for yourself and have more fun and the business is going to grow. So from doing so, his business went from 7 figures to 8 figures. He started, because he's got so much time, he's like, I need to do something with my time. He started another business in like he loves WRXs, right? Subaru WRXs, he's obsessed with them. He's like, I'm just going to start a YouTube channel and have fun doing with this. Even if it doesn't make money, great. Thing is, it's starting to make money. So by doing that, you free up, he starts not just having the business run him, and control him to him running the business and him controlling the business with that, which I think is just critical.
Well, that's a point to a good thing we talk about a lot is the balance between the strategist, which is usually the founder person. You're the person thinking of the concept, the approach, the whole thing, and the orchestrator, the person who's actually kind of pulling things together and like that kind of thing. right? There's somebody who actually conceives of and writes the score, right? Who scores the symphony, who authors that. And then there's the person who actually like is the orchestrator, who actually pulls together and directs all of the performers to deliver on it. And those are very different things, very different roles. It's rare that you do both well.
Yeah, I agree. Like there's going to be somebody that's far better. Well, there is. There's somebody that's far better at editing a podcast than me. Because one, I don't know how to edit a podcast. Me, somebody that's far better at scheduling things in, that's far more organized than me, like hire that person to do that work. It's just makes sense. Like you could spend money on a course, but it's not just the money on the course that you're going to spend to learn how to do that task, but it's also the time and the failures that it costs to get that task done and then to do it well. Then you got somebody that's like, done SEO or digital marketing a bit, in, you know, for 20 years, hire that person. Like it's a business expense. It's so good.
This notion of what's sustainable, what should you actually do, if anything, right? Like we created this podcast some years ago now, but even in the beginning of creating it, I'm like, I don't want to edit the thing every week. I never edited a single episode. I want to conceive of the format and do the interviews, but I need everything around it to be in a consistent, easy thing. And because like we started without any clear business model, it's got to pay for itself like really quickly right up front, right? So
yeah, I was just, sorry, I was turning around because I'm looking for this book that I've got. It's a great book. It's by Roger Hamilton. It's called Your Life, Your Legacy. I'm not sure if you heard of it. Yeah.
No.
It's basically a book of different like insanely wealthy people, billionaires, but they were only able to get to that stage because they worked out what sort of wealth profile they were. And they needed to hire people that were in the different wealth profiles that could help them be complete. And, you know, so Oprah Winfrey, right? Amazing, amazing star. She's a star is what they call it. But she needs like a mechanic and she needs other people on her team to make it work. Otherwise, she just wouldn't be as famous and as wealthy and making such an impact that she is. So we need to have those people on our side that do those things better than we can.
Yeah. Well, that's the difference between building a business. And in many cases, as you've started the business, there's a piece of it that you maybe want to hold. To be honest, to be saleable, you should hold on to nothing. Just be the strategist, right? But there are times when, like, I've held on to this role of hosting the show, where you want to hang on to some piece of it and really knowing and understanding that building all the other parts around it is a critical thing. We're running out of time. So I just want to point our guests to a couple of things or resources. If you want to know more about Jared and his work and that kind of thing, buying online businesses, we'll put it right there in the crawl down below and in the show notes and that kind of thing. But you can hear he's got a wealth of experience now, first buying and selling and developing a few of his own, but also now helping others choose and build their online businesses. And definitely with a piece of lifestyle and balance, right? Knowing that he's got to keep his health right, that a little bit of surfing time is important to him, getting out on there and connecting with all that. Like you need that too. Maybe you don't surf, but maybe you need more time on the tennis court or like whatever it is, right? That balance. So buying business online, talk to Jared there. I want to thank Lucy Summers in the background, getting our show ready and out the door, our guests prepared and like that promoted and all that kind of thing. And in my world, right, big thanks to my mentor and creator of the whole Scaling Up Framework, Vern Harnish, and the EO organization, eonetwork.org, our sponsor for the show, the EO chapters in the Bay Area. And then who helps us get our show out the door every week and who does all the rest of that stuff for me is Podfly Productions. Albie Burge, Ayn Kadena, and Tim McGowan, who edit the audio and distribute it and write up the show notes and proofread everything and like get it out every week so that I can just focus on this little part that doesn't make me sick, but is actually really fun. Thanks again, everyone, for watching, for listening. Stay tuned. We'll talk to you again next week. Tune in, drop in, download, like, subscribe. You'll get them every week. And then, of course, there's the whole big back catalog. You'll find all that at more at scalingcoach.com. Talk to you again next time. Bye-bye, everyone.